I think that song that we sang, the first song that we sang in particular, about the road we go through and the path that we take and how it eventually makes us stronger, was something that the Apostle Paul understood. Last week in chapter 24, we were talking about his another trial of his before the governor Felix and the Jewish leaders who had come down to Caesarea to try him in front of Felix. And yet they could not come up with a reasonable argument to convince Felix that he was guilty of anything that Felix had to do with. And so we pick up where we stopped just before we got into Felix's judgment, where he likes to put things off. Let me read from chapter 24, from verse 22 through 27, the remainder of the chapter. But when Felix heard these things, having more accurate knowledge of the way, he adjourned the proceedings and said, "When Lysias, the commander, comes down, I will make a decision on your case." So he commanded the centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, and told him not to forbid any of his friends to provide for or visit him. And after some days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. Now as he reasoned about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid and answered, "Go away for now. When I have a convenient time, I will call for you." Meanwhile, he also hoped that money would be given him by Paul, that he might release him. Therefore, he sent for him more often and conversed with him. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus succeeded Felix, and Felix, wanting to do the Jews a favor, left Paul bound. This theme of putting off a decision on Paul is going to continue through the next chapter, as you'll see when we get to chapter 25. Let's talk about Felix postponing judgment on Paul. We see that in verse 22, it says, Felix heard these things, having more accurate knowledge of the way. Some commentators that I read say that this means that Felix, because his wife was Jewish, knew about the way, knew about Christ, knew about redemption, about everything that Paul had talked about the resurrection. I don't necessarily agree with that. A commentator is always just commenting on what a line in the Bible says. And as my late father-in-law used to like to point out something that he'd heard once, the Bible can shed a lot of light on these commentaries. But the way I see this is Felix has having more accurate knowledge of the way is indicating that he was listening to what Paul had to say, and he was hearing some things that were straightening out some misconceptions or some misunderstandings in his own mind. Sure, he might have had some background because his wife was Jewish, but after all, he's a Roman, he's a pagan. He was not Jewish himself. It doesn't say that he was apostolate, that he was a practicing Jew, or anything like that. So it seems to me that it's quite possible that he obtained this more accurate knowledge of the way through listening to Paul. And he concedes the point that had been made by Tertullus, the orator who argued on behalf of the Jewish leaders. Remember, he said he complained that they were trying to straighten things out with Paul when Lysias, the Roman commander, took him from them by force, which was a complete misrepresentation of the facts. But he conceded the point that he'd wait and hear from Lysias, the commander. Now, in this, was he trying to appease the Jews, or was he hoping that Lysias wouldn't exactly be hopping on the next express train down to Caesarea and being there the next day, but that the Jews might get tired of waiting for Lysias to come and go back to Jerusalem and leave him alone? It's hard to say. But he doesn't release Paul. He does not release Paul. He's heard the arguments. He can't find anything against Paul, but he's still holding him. And we see at the end of chapter 24, probably the greatest reason why. Wanting to do the Jews a favor, even through those 2 years, towards the end of his command as governor, he kept Paul bound. And we see in verse 23 that he told the guard, excuse me, he told the centurion to give Paul liberty. Liberty to us, as citizens of this country, pretty much means freedom, doesn't it? It doesn't have anything to do with imprisonment. Is that the way it is for most of us? Liberty to a sailor means that you've got some time off the boat. You're in port or something, you get liberty. You get time off from your duties. It's a day off. Again, that's not quite the case here. But the word that is used here, the word in Greek that is used here, does mean, got a note about it somewhere, the specifics. It does mean that there's a certain relaxation of the imprisonment, and he's allowed to not to come and go necessarily on his own, but perhaps he wasn't chained to a centurion. Perhaps Felix took him at his word that he would stay put and with a guard nearby, and he was allowed to have visitors come and go. A lot of commentators they condemn Felix and later Festus, both of these Roman governors. They condemn them for not freeing Paul at this point in time. I have to ask the question, though, who is in charge of this whole thing? Who is in control? Why? We can come up with all sorts of reasons why we think Felix and Festus are not releasing Paul. But you'll see as we go along in Acts that the way that Paul is going to get to Rome is by being held by the Roman authorities and being taken to the Roman court to appeal his case at that time. We'll get into a little bit more detail on that later. But we see, too, that Felix did spend a lot of time with Paul, frequently, and he brought his wife Drusilla. Drusilla, as I mentioned, was Jewish. And so he sent for Paul and asked some more stuff. Did he have curiosity about the gospel? Was it curiosity that it piqued his interest? Was his wife curious? It could have been any of these reasons. But one of the reasons why it drags on, according to Luke, is Felix was hoping for some money. You'll remember that Paul testified in his defense that he had brought alms and offerings from Asia, from the other churches. And Felix heard this. Felix was a bit corrupt. I think I pointed that out last week. He was corrupt like many. He enjoyed his power. He was ambitious and he was greedy. So he was probably thinking, as pointed out here in verse 26, he hoped that money would be given him by Paul, that Paul or his cohorts might come along with some of the money that they had collected. Obviously, if they had some money, they could do that. And I think it's a pretty good lesson that Paul sat there for 2 years and nobody did it. It doesn't say nobody tried to do it, nobody offered to do it, but they did not do it. The Christians did not try to buy their way out of a situation like this. They did not believe in bribery. We think about Drusilla and whether she had any real curiosity about the gospel too. Take a look at Drusilla's lineage. Drusilla was as the historic accounts go, she was strikingly beautiful, as they say. Beautiful on the outside, but what about on the inside? Well, she was the great-granddaughter of Herod the Great. Anybody remember what Herod the Great was known for? Remember when Jesus was 2 years old and they took him away from They took him out of the country. Herod the Great was having all the babies of that age murdered, right? Because he was afraid there was a king that was going to rise up against him. That's Herod the Great. That's her great-grandfather. She was also the great-niece of Herod Antipas, or Antipas, I'm not sure exactly how to say that. It was another Herod. And he's the one who beheaded John the Baptizer. She was the daughter of Agrippa I, Agrippa the First, or Agrippa. Agrippa martyred James. We find that in chapter 12, verse 1. And later on in chapter 12, we see how he died from a very nasty case of the worms eating him up from the inside out. So she had a very bloody bloodline. All of them enemies of Christ in so many different ways before they knew Christ and without knowing Christ, but they were murderers. Now Felix, her husband, had seduced Drusilla from her husband. So that goes to show you another part of their relationship, another part of her character. And together they had a son. Some accounts say that her son died during the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in 79 AD, just a few years after this. And other accounts indicate that she also died at that same time during the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. So whether she was interested in the gospel or not, it didn't seem to take. We don't have any account of Felix or Drusilla ever coming around and obeying the gospel. But Felix and Drusilla heard Paul reason about righteousness, self-control, and judgment. Righteousness, or obedience to the Lord. Would somebody read Matthew 22, please? Matthew 22, 37 through 40.
Jesus said unto them, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang the law of the prophets and the prophets.
It's a good verse, but I'm not certain why I have that in there. I apologize. I was looking for I guess you could say it does sum up. It sums up what we're supposed to be all about as Christians, doesn't it? And it also refers back to the law and the prophets. And Drusilla, as a Jew, should have known about the law and the prophets. He taught about self-control. I described earlier what Drusilla's and Felix's relationship was like. And I talked about Felix's greed. And so he was lecturing them on behavior that neither of them exhibited. He's basically standing up there in front of his captor and his wife, telling him that they're not acting right. To me, that takes a lot of bravery. So Felix was afraid. I believe it's the King James Version that says Felix trembled. He probably trembled once Paul got to the part about judgment. Paul could stand there all day and talk to them about behavior, and they could say, well, who's he to tell me how to act? But when you start to understand that there's consequences for your behavior, hopefully it has an impact, and it did have an impact at that point in time on Felix. Judgment. Why? Could somebody read 2 Corinthians 5:10?
For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad.
According to what he has done, whether good or bad. And this obviously gave Felix a little cause for concern. If you read the American Standard Version, Felix was terrified. So he was afraid, he trembled, he was terrified, depending upon exactly which translation you see. But unfortunately, fear without repentance, submission, obedience, it's not going to do you any good at all. So Paul was held in custody, military custody, for 2 years. And we spoke about that earlier. And aside from the fact that Paul was obviously meeting with Felix and Drusilla, I think there's a pretty good chance that he was spending a little bit of time teaching others around him, Roman soldiers, other pagans. They say that, it says there that Felix said that he was allowed to have company come and go. But this is a fairly quiet time with regard to the book of Acts, because that one last verse in chapter 24 tells us 2 years go by. And all we see happening there is him talking to, all we have details of is him talking to Drusilla and Felix. He did not write another book during that time frame that we have any record of. He may have written letters. If people are free to come and go, they may have brought letters in and sent letters out. We don't have any record of any other letters. So after 2 years, Felix is out as governor, and Festus now comes in. If we look at the events of the last three chapters, 21 through 24, the accusations against Paul and the defense that Paul gives, we see the Jews from Asia claiming that he's teaching against the people, the law, the temple, and defiling the temple. And we see Paul's defense, which is essentially preaching the gospel message. That was in chapter 21, which ended up in confusion, and Paul having to be rescued by the Romans. And then before the Sanhedrin Council, when he says he has lived with a good conscience before God, the high priest commands that he be slapped, intimidated him through violence. He essentially accuses his accusers. He accuses his accusers, saying that the hope and the resurrection of the dead are the only reasons why they're accusing him of anything. And again, it is in confusion with Paul being rescued. And God stands by him. The Lord stands by him. And there's a huge military force that takes him to Caesarea, out of Jerusalem, away from the temple, away from the main body of the Jews, away from the 40-plus people who had vowed that they would kill him, that they wouldn't eat or drink anything until they killed him. And then before Felix, the governor, in Caesarea, we go through the same thing again. We have a high priest, we have the elders, we have the orator. They're claiming that he's a plague, a creator of dissension, a ringleader, trying to get the governor to be afraid of him, trying to make the governor afraid of him. But they drop the charges a little bit. They say he tried to profane the temple. And then they say that they were hindered in justice by an overzealous Roman commander. But we don't see his original accusers here, and we don't see any proof. We don't see any testimony from any eyewitness, which is according to Jewish law. And Paul's defense, he hasn't had time to do this. When they found him, he was purifying himself. He was being purified He was trying to appease the Jews. He was trying to make peace between Christians and Jews. And he was bringing alms and offerings to his nation. So he refutes the charges of dissension and disrespect to the temple. But it doesn't seem to appease his enemies, the enemies of the church. So why was Paul held in Caesarea for 2 years? Was it justice or was it politics? No one is. Politics. So why did Felix wish to do the Jews a favor? Any thoughts on that subject? Why would the Roman governor want to do the Jews a favor? His wife was a Jew.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Or maybe his wife was Jewish. Maybe a big thing is that back then, the Jews were considered very lively.
Where? What?
Very lively. Very rebellious. And so that's one of the reasons why the Roman governors kept cycling through, is because they had difficulty trying to keep them calm. And so trying to do them a favor, as Felix might be trying to do, it could be a way to try to mollify them, try to make them more docile.
When you look at it that way and consider what response and reaction they would have had if the Roman governor had just said, okay, he's free, I don't see anything here, there would have been an uproar, right? Possible uprising. And they are charged with keeping the peace. So doing the Jews a favor. The Jews were, they had a very influential population still, even under Roman occupation.
I'm going to make a friend now. I'm not going to cost anything.
Yeah. Just food and water, bread and water. Okay, so the Bible is silent about the next 2 years of Paul's life, except for his interaction with Felix and Drusilla. But then Felix is succeeded by Festus. I always get Felix and Festus mixed up. That's a pretty good reason for it. So we see Felix. Let me go ahead and read the beginning of chapter 25. I'm going to read the first 6 verses. Now when Festus had come to the province, after 3 days he went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief men of the Jews informed him against Paul, and they petitioned him, asking a favor against him, that he would summon him, Paul, to Jerusalem, while they lay in ambush along the road to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself was going there shortly. Therefore, he said, let those of you who have authority among you go down with me and accuse this man to see if there is any fault in him. And when he had remained among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea. And the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, he commanded Paul to be brought. So, Festus is new to the territory. He comes into town. Doesn't say whether he does or doesn't know anybody, whether he's been around there before. I presume that he's coming from Rome since he's just been appointed governor. So he's come into town. He settles into Caesarea, which is going to be his headquarters, and then he goes up to Jerusalem to meet the Jews, to meet the Jewish leaders and the chief priests. They ask him what? We want you to pass judgment on this guy. Right here, right now, right? Their plan was they were going to ambush him along the side of the road and kill him. Does that sound familiar? 2 years have gone by. Has anything changed? Has anybody here ever carried a grudge that strong for 2 years? You know how it eats you up?
I wonder what happened to the 40 people who made the vow.
They got to be mighty skinny by now.
Yeah.
I was wondering if they were part of that same group that were going to plan to sit along the side of the road and ambush them.
They're probably dead now if they kept their vow.
Yeah. Well, they weren't very good at following the law anyway, so it's very unlikely that they kept their vow. So So Paul's enemies still want him dead. They want to ambush him. It makes me think of Ecclesiastes, part of Ecclesiastes, the last part of 1:9. There is nothing new under the sun. Nothing has changed. So Paul's enemies still want him dead. The 40-plus who had taken an oath, a vow, were the ones mentioned back in 23:12, if you're curious about what that says. What does it say about the character of the Jewish leadership? What does it say about their character? What are they doing all this time? Is this the way they handle everything? It can't just be Paul that they treat like this. They have no regard for Jewish law, which requires witnesses and an opportunity to stand before your accusers. They don't have no regard for Roman law, which requires the same thing. Not quite the same thing. It requires that the accuser, that you get to listen to your accuser and then respond to your accuser. But it's similar. But Festus is either smart enough or afraid enough to deny their request. He's probably also thinking that the Jews aren't the only ones around, the Jews aren't the only power, but there are Christians around there too. What would happen if, under his watch, he let Paul go get killed? That wouldn't sit very well either. So Paul has another opportunity to stand trial, right? Verses 6 through 8. I'm going to go ahead and read down 7 through 12. Okay, he's at the judgment seat, commanding Paul to be brought. Verse 7. When he had come, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood about and laid many serious complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, "Neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar, have I offended in anything at all. But Festus, wanting to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul and said, 'Are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged before me concerning these things?' So Paul said, 'I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you very well know. For if I am an offender or have committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to dying. But if there is nothing in these things of which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar.' And Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, 'You've appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you shall go.'" So, like I said, the Jews are there making their charges, very serious charges. Absolutely no proof. How arrogant is that? To stand there and just demand that this person be turned over to them, that this person be killed. And Paul's defense is that he has never done a thing against the temple, against the law, Jewish law, nor against Caesar, meaning against Roman law. Very briefly, Caesar. Caesar is reference to the Roman emperor. It's a Greek word referring to the Roman emperor. Augustus is also a Greek word referring to the Roman emperor. So in this day and age, it's around 60, 62 AD. Who's the emperor? Paul wants to go see Nero. Right? Now, he doesn't have a very good reputation in the long run with the Jews, or with the Christians. But again, Festus wants to do the Jews a favor. Probably the same background as Felix. He's trying to keep the peace. He doesn't want to cause any more of a disruption. His decision, like Felix, is based upon politics, not justice. And you could kind of wonder from, what is the verse? Verse 9, whether Festus was trying to set Paul up, whether he thought, well, maybe if he did let him out and he got killed along the way, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing. But Paul doesn't take that. He doesn't like that idea. So he wants to he utilizes his right as a Roman citizen to be heard, to be appealed to the Roman emperor. And it's interesting in that, because what decision has ever been made against him? Just charges. So what is he appealing? And this kind of makes a quandary, sets up a quandary for Festus. But I want to look at 10 and 11 for a moment. Kind of take an aside here. Notice that Paul is utilizing civil law. He's utilizing the protection of civil law, right? Christians don't need to stand alone, away from the law, apart from the law. We need to be part of the law. We need to be under man's law, and we can use man's law as we need to. That's one point. The other point is that Paul concedes that the death penalty is right under civil law. It is right, and he would honor it if it's done in the proper way. If he's found guilty in the proper manner, guilty of a capital offense. So two things: civil law, our relationship as Christians to the civil law, and the other thing, people who say that people who stand as Christians and just say the Bible says that killing is killing of any sort is wrong. Paul's saying here that a capital offense is a capital offense. So Paul appeals to Caesar, the Roman emperor. And Festus, it says, confers with the council. It's not the Jewish council here. He's in a court. He's got a council of Romans who he works with in a case like this. And he conferred with them to verify that Paul had the right to do this and what the proper procedure is. And so he says, if that's what you want, that's what you're going to get. As if he knows something down the road, but who knows what he knew. It could be, too, that this is a case of once he's out of sight, he's out of mind, he's out of my hands. Festus thinks he's out of my hands, so what do I need to worry about then? But before Paul can pack his bags, who should drop in but Agrippa and Bernice? We're not really going to have time to get into this. So we will pick up at verse 13 next week. Any questions or comments?